nuclear war. That's supposed to be the stuff of the past, talking historically about the Second World War and then Hiroshima, Nagasaki, et cetera, or even in the early part of the Cold War, all those famous mushroom cloud videos we've seen for all the different nations that were doing nuclear testing above ground, et cetera. You know, all the people that were maybe the 1962 nuclear crisis with the Soviet Union, when people were afraid that we were going to get into a nuclear war and people were diving under desks and having those drills in schools and all that. But that's in the past, or is it? Part of the problem that we have right now, folks, is that we think that that stuff can't happen anymore. That since it didn't happen in 1962, now everything's good to go and our nuclear arsenal will prevent anyone and deter anyone else from using it, so we can rest easy. I've shown you many times on recent shows on some very eminent, highly qualified, four-star, three-star generals, other people, former cabinet members, telling you not to worry about it. There's no way Putin is going to ever use nuclear weapons, so just rest easy. Well, listen, I'm telling you, things have been happening here of late that should wake people up and sober people up to realize that is not an unrealistic possibility. Now, whether it comes to fruition or not, it depends a great deal on what we do next and over the coming weeks, even before President Trump takes office on January 20th. And Putin has taken some action here in retaliation for American and Western British action that has upped the ante a lot. So Russia, first of all, talked about how they were going to lower the threshold for the use of nuclear weapons. And then that was almost immediately followed by Putin firing a new missile into Ukraine, which some people initially said was an intercontinental ballistic missile. Then later on, it was corrected to an intermediate range missile. But regardless, there was a new weapon used in war for the first time. And listen, we want to try to find out exactly what was deployed here and what the ramifications may mean. And there is nobody better to discuss this than MIT professor Ted Postol. We've had him on our show before about things in the Middle East, and he is on top of this one here. First of all, Professor, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's nice to be back. I don't think I'm quite on top of it, but I may have some things of interest to say.
Well, you're certainly more on top of it than anybody in the mainstream media or anybody else that we've seen here who are really talking just in little bullet points here and no analysis at all. So I know that you have some knowledge, and we're grateful to have it today.
Unfortunately, all these so-called experts are fake, to be blunt about it. And, you know, they don't know anything. And in fact, I suspect that the people in positions of authority have not been told anything by the intelligence, because the intelligence people are probably still trying to analyze what they now have. And they're probably not able to give the people in positions of authority much information. They probably can tell them about the launch of the missile, if it was a single missile, because we can see that from satellites. But other than that, I don't think they would have much analysis beyond what I'm able to show here today.
Well, yeah, and we're very grateful to have that, because while everybody else is trying to figure out, it's not stopping politicians from making a lot of cocky comments without having to worry about what's coming out, which is one of the reasons I was so alarmed by it and wanted to have you on today to provide some actual sobering information out there that tells people that, hang on a minute, don't get too cocky too quick until we know a little bit more. Now, this I'm going to play a bit of a clip here from President Putin of Russia, who actually just he made a lot of comments yesterday. We may show some of those in a bit. But he also said something just a couple of hours ago, so brand new, specifically talking about what kind of missile was fired.
В этой связи подчеркну, что тема Орешник — это не модернизация старых еще советских систем. Хотя понятно, все мы вышли из различных систем Советского Союза. Все мы воспитывались на том, что было сделано предыдущими поколениями. В известной степени пользовались их результатами, но эта система действительно, это прежде всего результат работы, вашей работы, работы, которая была проделана в российские, в времена, в условиях новой России. Она создана ими на базе современных, новейших разработок. И обязан сказать, что в сегодняшних условиях, когда мы сталкиваемся с новыми возрастающими угрозами.
Okay, well, that's good enough for right now, Gary. He's going on talking about why he's developed these, but he makes an interesting claim there in yesterday's speech that he made to the nation. He said it was an intermediate range ballistic missile as opposed to an ICBM that many in the Western initially said, which Zelensky himself actually claimed. But he said that it was intermediate range. Today, he said it's a new missile, not just a refurbished old one, but it's a new missile. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, a new missile could mean a lot of things. It wouldn't surprise me if it's a missile that uses pre-existing booster rockets, which doesn't mean it's an old missile, because it's the front end of the missile, the payload section, that really requires all of the innovation. So it would seem to me that President Putin's statement is almost certainly accurate. In fact, it seems to me it's got to be accurate from what we see already, what we've already observed. But you know, there may be pieces of the rocket that are from from older times, because you know, you have these big rocket stages, you can use them for all kinds of things. So, yeah. I find his statements very plausible from what I've been looking at.
Now, he said in his speeches yesterday that this was because it was an intermediate range, and there used to be an intermediate range treaty which we broke, and then they eventually got out of as well. And so the claim is that's one of the reasons why they continued supporting on this. But one of the things he claimed was that, listen, this is a missile that flies at Mach 10, and it can't be intercepted. In fact, here's how he put it.
Danny, can you remind me when this starts at 250?
Yes, I believe it is. I'm sorry. I thought this was the one you already had queued up. Yeah, I think this starts at 250.
250. Here we go.
Along the entire line of contact, and all the objectives that we set before ourselves will be met. As a response to the use of US and UK manufactured weapons, the Russian forces have carried out a combined strike on one of the military industrial facilities in Ukraine. And this included the test of a novel intermediate range Russian missile system, a ballistic missile with a non-nuclear hypersonic payload was used. The test was carried out successfully. The objectives of the launch have been met. One of the largest and well-known industrial centers that is known.
Okay, that's good enough for there, Gary. Yeah, we'll cut that. We'll come back into that other part a minute ago, the one you already had queued up about talking about how they can't be knocked down. But he specified, number one, that this was a non-nuclear payload, implying that there could be a nuclear payload on the other. I wonder if you could talk about how those missiles work and how it exchanges one warhead for another.
Well, I think that I made a guess about the missiles, or the missile, the single missile. I thought there were multiple missiles, but it looks like it's a single missile with payloads that are dispersed. And it's sort of funny because I can show you a diagram that I produced 30 years ago for a fruitless talk to the International Institute for Strategic Studies, because nobody believed what I was talking about. But it sounds to me like this is exactly what the Russians are displaying now. So if you can show here, there it is. This is the front slide, April 10, 1996. But if you look at the next slide, I was showing a submunition deploying missile. In this case, the submunitions could be, they could be packages which themselves contain submunitions. In other words, it can be groups of submunitions in separate packages that then deploy smaller packages of munitions. But the idea is that you disperse the different munitions along a direction which is shown at the apogee here. That's called the range insensitive axis. I'll explain what that means. Basically, it's a direction in space where no matter what the speed you deploy the object on, it will still land at the same location, but it will follow a different trajectory and it will land at a different time. Let's look at the next slide. This is a very primitive drawing because what I was trying to show is that a Scud missile could be used to deploy missiles on short range, submunitions on short range, along, in this case, the range insensitive axis, which for the Scud missile is very close to perpendicular to its direction of motion. But in the next slide, slide four, I show you, if you look at the leftmost brown arrow, the brown arrow shows you three of the packages which are dispersed at the same time along the range insensitive axis, which you see to the left. So you see on the bottom trajectory, the object that was downward, was sent with a downward velocity, is moving ahead on a slightly different trajectory than the object above it, which is moving basically on the trajectory that was originally, it was the missile was on. And then you see further behind, in yet a third trajectory on top, the object that's trailing further behind. And if you look near the point of impact where there's a brown arrow, you can see all of these things are lined up along the axis of arrival. So so you would expect to see the munitions that are dispersed spread out along the axis of arrival when they're arriving. So if we go to slide six, we see here bright areas in the sky. I have put in these ellipsoid areas. These are probably clusters of munitions arriving roughly along the axis that's shown in this particular diagram.
Do we have some video of that?
Yeah, we can show the video. Let's look at the video. This is real time, I guess, first. No, this is the slow video.
One third time.
That's okay. So you can see this coming in. There are six waves, or maybe really six deployments. They're not very far apart in time. It all occurred over about a 7-second arrival time, which is perfectly reasonable given the kinematics of the Keplerian trajectory. And what we're seeing are clouds of munitions coming in, and the camera can't discriminate between them because the brightness of the objects are just washing out the camera's ability to see any detail.
I wanted to point out here, I was comparing this to the incoming Iranian missiles into Israel that we've talked about several times before, and these, at least to my eyes, seem like they're traveling substantially faster.
They do appear to be traveling quite a lot faster, because probably they are designed to be aerodynamically, to have what is called a large ballistic coefficient. That basically means that the object is aerodynamically designed so it will not slow up very much in the atmosphere. In other words, it's trim, it's heavy, it's aerodynamically shaped. So, for example, if you have a ball going into the atmosphere, it's going to have a very low ballistic coefficient because it's going to have a large aerodynamic area relative to a rod-like object that weighs the same amount, which will have a much higher ballistic coefficient and will slow up much less, will also get much hotter. And in the case of these materials, it may have stuff burning off, which would give it a bright hue around the object that this video camera, which is, you know, pretty primitive video camera, is unable to deal with. The automatic controls, brightness control for the video camera is just washed out. And the focal plane array where the images are being imaged onto have what's called bleeding, where the signal gets bled into all the adjacent pixels because it's too bright to be handled.
Gary, could I get you to roll that that other video we had of Putin talking about whether or not these missiles can be shot down?
There is no way to counteract a missile that flies at 10 Mach, which is 2.5 to 3 kilometers per second. Existing anti-missile systems and the anti-missile systems deployed by the United States and Europe cannot intercept such missiles. It is impossible.
Now, I've heard, Ted, that that many in the West, some of these experts that you described a minute ago, are saying, well, this is older technology. This is old RS-26, I think, which has been around since, I want to say, 2011, something like that. But that this is just Putin blustering. He's just trying to bluff you into thinking that these can't be shot down because we have the THAAD anti-aircraft system and we can do it. What do you say to that?
I mean, I'm glad they know this because I didn't know this. I had to do some work on this, unlike what it sounds like they did. This is a new system. There's no question it's a new system. Anybody who claims otherwise has not looked at the data. There's no question this is a new system. It's a system that fragments the warhead into many pieces. And those pieces would have to be intercepted independently by multiple interceptors. So there were 23 separate clusters of objects that came in. I say 23 clusters of objects. So there were 23 packages of some kind that deployed additional groups of munitions. And God knows how many of these targets they would have to be dealt with interceptors, especially hit-to-kill interceptors, which can do nothing but destroy an object within fractions of a meter of it.
Now, so, I remember when you were talking about during the last Iranian attack into Israel, especially because there were more missiles that were fired there, and you showed a lot of the video where they were coming in, and they were fast, but not near as fast as this. And you pointed out that most of those were not hit, even on the air bases here. Do you think that whether it's Patriot or David Sling or the THAAD system, can they knock these out?
No, there's no way they could knock these out. The THAAD system in particular, well, the Patriot as well. That if you shoot an interceptor, all the best you can do is if you happen to hit one of the munitions. Now, there are 23 packages of munitions, and we are not seeing the packages come in. We are seeing a cloud of munitions deployed by each independent package. Each of the 23 packages. So those 23 packages are made up of, I don't know how many munitions. I just don't know. But if they engaged one of the packages, which would already have deployed its submunitions, they would only be able to hit one munition at best, if they even can hit that. All the rest would come through. So effectively, they could destroy nothing. You would take the whole THAAD battery, only has 48 interceptors in it. You could expend the whole THAAD battery on this system and only destroy, if everything hit something, which is very doubtful, you could have only destroyed a small fraction of the payload on this missile. A small fraction. So I don't know what these people are talking about.
Now, those videos you've shown there that have been making their rounds on social media and on mainstream media a lot. But one that hasn't is something that I saw on Military Summary this morning out of Kazakhstan, which has a very, very interesting signature. I'd like your view on. Gary, if you can roll that tape.
We have very interesting videos that were published from the border with Kazakhstan. Let's take a look at them. And according to the author of this video, here we can see the flight path of the Arezhnik missile. I can't tell you for sure whether it's true or not. Maybe this is something else, but the sources are saying that this is exactly the Arezhnik missile that was heading towards Dnipropetrovsk, Dnipro, on the territory of Ukraine. And we have this Arezhnik missile from another angle. And this is the same missile, but from another angle, also somewhere from the part of Russia between Kazakhstan and Ukraine. And of course, people are asking question why the Russians decided to call the missile of Arezhnik by the name of Arezhnik. And today we got very interesting analysis and very interesting photo. For example, right in the left picture, we can see Arezhnik, and in English, it sounds like Hazel. And to the right, we can see the Russians, the Arezhnik warhead. So as you can see, there are a lot of similar things, and this is the reason why the Russians decided to call the missile of Arezhnik by the name of Arezhnik. In English, it sounds Hazel.
Now, the closest I have ever seen that signature of anything in the air is like, I remember back in the days when I was a kid, and the Saturn V rocket, when it was going up into the space and some of the lunar modules, whatever, and you had that big plume off of it. But I've never seen anything else like that, certainly in missiles. Have you seen anything like this, and what do you make of it?
Yeah, I hope you guys will send me these videos so I can do further work on them, take a look at them more carefully. I appreciate them because I haven't had a chance to look at them. But what I think may be happening, this is again a guess, is what we were seeing was the plume from a rocket vehicle that had multiple rocket motors on it. And each of those rocket motors was propelling a package of submunitions that would then be deployed into a target area. I'm just guessing. This is just a guess. But that's certainly a different rocket system if that guess is correct. And no unitary rocket stage.
Published from the border with Kazakhstan. Let's take
a unitary rocket stage does not look like this because it has a single exhaust plume. Now the plume is spread out because it's at high altitude, and the different rocket motors are clustered together, and it's a very low pressure in the atmosphere at this high altitude. So the plumes are spreading out. But I think this is a rocket that is a cluster.
That's fascinating.
Of separate rocket motors. And that probably that cluster is deploying separate vehicles that are themselves deploying clusters of munitions. So, and anybody who thinks that they can intercept that, who knows what they're talking, I mean, they can't know what they're talking about if they think they can intercept that. And
Gary, I know you've had some B-roll that we've shown before. That one image we've shown there, both at full time and one third time, is one. But there's another one where the impacts are coming through clouds or something. If you could pull one of those up, because I wonder if you could, if you still have those, Gary. Okay, he's going to be able to pull them up.
Yeah,
what he's going to show here, I wonder if you can talk, because they seem to have a different signature as they're coming in. And again, this is very different than anything we've seen in the Iranian missile attacks or so. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about when these come up.
Well, we'll see if I can understand what I'm looking at. But this is a new weapon. Anyone who says otherwise doesn't know what they're talking about and hasn't looked at the data.
And actually, before you bring that up there, I wonder if you can talk about the difference. What is the difference in performance of the missile and of the impacts between a conventional warhead and a nuclear warhead? Yeah, that's the one I was talking about there.
Yeah.
But yeah, before you talk about that video, though, if you could just, because that seems to be, that's something that Putin has commented on several times here. That this could be, those were conventional warheads, but it could be a nuclear warhead. What impact would that have on the performance of the missile?
Well, it could be a cluster of munitions, but if it were a nuclear warhead, it would be accompanied by numerous decoys. So, in other words, instead of having many, many submunitions, What you do is you have a much larger warhead and you have much smaller decoys, and those decoys replicate a radar and infrared signal that makes them look like the big warhead, the nuclear warhead, so that you can't tell the difference between the nuclear warhead and the decoy. And we've already seen decoys flown by the Russians. We saw decoys early in the war. If we get on again somewhat later, I can pull up some of the photographs I have of decoys that were on the Iskander missiles. So there were definitely decoys, and those decoys were designed to confuse radars and infrared homing systems. No question about it. The Russians deployed decoys. I have other images of decoys the Russians build.
And certainly when they're traveling that fast, you almost don't even need them anyway.
Yeah, having that as a nuclear payload is no problem and would certainly be extremely difficult to intercept. And at very best, I mean, the most careful technical statement you could make is against a perfect missile defense system, it would have a much less than perfect intercept rate, because the number of interceptors you would need would be enormous because of all the decoys. And you just don't have that. It's just not practical. These interceptors are so expensive and so limited in numbers.
Right.
This system could readily be defeated. For example, you could send, let's say, two or three of these systems in, only one of which had a nuclear warhead and decoys on it, and the other two could be filled with decoys. So you'd have, you know, God knows how many, dozens and dozens and maybe hundreds of decoys. How are you going to deal with that? So Putin is absolutely correct. So since they want to say this guy's bluffing, they ought to know what they're talking about before they say the guy's bluffing. It's incredible to me. It's really incredible to me, the reckless behavior of these people.
Well, believe me, I'm right with you on that one. Gary, if you can bring that video up in here, I wonder if you can talk to us a little bit about what we're seeing in this video right here.
I'm actually not sure what we're seeing. I'll have to look at this. First of all, it's coming through the clouds. It's a cluster of things. It's got a very big plume, or more likely, it's got a group of, it's a cloud of materials, it looks to me, because it's not falling, it's not aligned with its direction of motion. So it could be a cluster of munitions, which are all creating their own luminous region. And I'd have to look at it, but it's not necessarily different in terms of the physical behavior, you know, the physical images of what we're seeing. But it's different from, you know, it's a different set of images than I've tried to analyze. But I think it might be a cluster of munitions coming through, all of which are on, in this case, a near vertical trajectory, but spread out over the width of the incoming trajectory. That's what I'm guessing.
And
I haven't studied it yet.
From looking at this one, the one that's showing right now, because I mean,
are coming in, they're more spread out.
Right. So that was what I was going to ask. When you're targeting something, I mean, this seems that would be an area weapon. And you talked a lot about CEP and everything else. Based on what you've seen here or to know, can you talk about how accurate the aim point may be from whatever they're trying to hit?
Well, that's, I would say it would take quite a bit of analysis. I don't see, you know, I just don't know. I mean, I think that without knowing what the target set is and what they hit and where the damage was, it would be very hard to reach any conclusions about the accuracy of this system. It's just, if we can get some data on what was hit and what the levels of damage were, we could tell if these systems had a higher precision of accuracy.
But I guess in any case, if it has a nuclear payload, it's not going to make any difference.
It's not going to. Yeah. Close is good enough with a nuclear weapon, as we often say.
So what is your bottom line about how concerned you are about the capacity of Russia to make good on some of these threats that they would attack Western targets outside of Ukraine if we continue firing long-range missiles into Russia?
Well, I think they've demonstrated that they have quite a substantial capability. I think it's not an accident that this missile at a 3 kilometer speed, because that means that the munition, the payload, traveled at a minimum from 1,000 kilometer range. At a minimum, I say, because I don't know if this payload was gliding during part of its trajectory. If it just followed a ballistic trajectory, then with reentry and, of course, slowing up and luminous heating, then it was it came from about a 1,000 kilometer range. That's a ballistic trajectory. But of course, if it hit the top of the atmosphere, the top of the atmosphere may be being 50 or 60 or 70 kilometers altitude at 3 kilometers per second speed, you could skip off the atmosphere and glide a bit. And so it could have come from a couple of thousand kilometers. My guess, but I haven't done the work. I want to be very careful here. I'll have more to say if we talk again. My guess is it came from Churyatam, if it came from in Kazakhstan, because that's a big launch site. Mm. And Churyatam would be, I don't know what the range to Churyatam is, but that would give us some guess. So the people in the intelligence, American intelligence community, if they would know at this, they would already know that there was a launch from some place in Russia. And probably, if I guess it's Churyatam, they would know that this missile was, if Churyatam is more than 1,000 kilometers away, which I think may well be the case, they would know that the incoming system was some kind of boost glide system. In other words, it boosted to a high speed, 3 kilometers per second, and then it was skipping off the atmosphere, gliding above the atmosphere, and then turned down.
Now, is there any way to tell from radar or anything else whether it's got a nuclear or conventional payload?
No, you don't know. You cannot tell by radar or infrared, no. But you can see the trail, the American satellites, I'll have data on that for another discussion, have very, very high sensitivity. So I have little doubt that the Americans were able to see the luminous objects, the most luminous objects, while they were skipping off the atmosphere. This is not a normal thing they would be able to see. If they were just warheads, they wouldn't see them. But these are bright objects. And so they would have seen a bright contrail from these objects. So they would have known that this is a boost glide kind of system. And if they think that this is not a new system, I don't know what they're doing. You know, it's absolutely a new system. And it's going to be a very capable system. So now, I don't think it's an accident that it was done from long range, because the Russians have been following the Intermediate Nuclear Force Agreement, even though the United States backed out of the agreement, because they have very wisely understood that if we have an arms race in Northern Europe with shorter range missiles, it's going to escalate into something that's going to turn Northern Europe into a tinderbox that could go up into a third world nuclear war instantaneously on very short notice. So this event is also tied, in my judgment, to the discussion of deployments of specialized boost glide missiles by the United States in 2026 in Germany. Mm. So basically what Putin is showing is that he has a system right now, not in 2026, that is comparable to the boost glide systems that the United States is still trying to develop. And those systems are not going to be good to be introduced in Europe by either Russia or the United States, because it's going to drive the timelines down to a few minutes at most, you know, for nuclear attack warning. And that's going to put everybody on the most short early warning attack posture you can imagine. So this is a warning for those people who don't have enough neurons to rub together to understand what Putin is saying here. Because he's really saying, guys, this is serious. We have the ability to deploy the kinds of weapons you guys are talking about in 2026 in Germany. And you Germans better figure out that you're a target. I've already given some talks to audiences in Germany about this problem of these missiles that the United States wants to deploy with Germany in 2026. This is going to drive the warning times down to minutes or shorter. And this is going to create a nuclear warning situation that will drive the risks of an accidental nuclear warning and a false alert or an accidental massive launch through the roof. This is really going to increase the danger of an accidental nuclear war. I cannot emphasize this enough. We have people in positions of the decision-making positions who have no idea what they're doing. If they are engaging in this kind of behavior and they have no idea what they're actually doing, and it's becoming clearer and clearer they do not know what they're doing, Mr. Putin just sent them a message.
Yeah,
and didn't send me a message because I knew this is a problem earlier.
And unfortunately, Professor, it doesn't look like that message is being received. We on a show earlier this afternoon showed comments by British Prime Minister Keir Starmer and new NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte that they're still talking about winning for Ukraine. Still, to this day, after these missile launches in the case of Starmer, although they didn't need it because, as you said, the knowledge has been out there. But I think we're getting into a really, really dangerous period, more dangerous than a lot of people recognize. We need to send shows like this and your comments out here, which is why we're so grateful to have you on today. So people are aware that this is no game. This is no joke. This is no movie. We're talking about existential issues here, and we need to cool things down right now and not wait a couple of months before Trump gets it, because God only knows what may happen in between now and then.
This is
given the joint U.S.-NATO escalation of attacks with Ukraine against Russia and with China and North Korea joining Russia to form an alliance against the West, would not you say that World War III has begun?
I would not say that. That is not the characterization that this building assesses. And you've seen us take measures to de-escalate tensions and to, and I'm sorry, I'm just speaking like broadly around the world, but when it comes to Ukraine, the commitment of this administration from the very beginning of this war was to help Ukraine take back its sovereign territory. A decision by another country to invade its sovereign neighbor cannot go unchecked. And that's why you've seen not just the United States, but 50 or so countries all around the world come together and support Ukraine through the Ukraine Defense Contact Group.
That was just two days ago.
This is a joke. I mean, she has... I hate to, you know, I really... I mean, the incompetence of that, well, the dishonesty maybe is a better way of that statement is just mind blowing. I mean, the United States attacked a sovereign country that has thousands of nuclear weapons. What is she talking about? That we're trying to not have an escalation?
Yeah, we're trying. We're taking de-escalatory measures.
How can you explain that?
Yeah.
Does she live in a different world?
Well, see, that's the problem. I mean, you see, that's the Department of Defense official spokesman or deputy spokesman. You see Keir Starmer and you see, you know, obviously Zelensky. They're just making all these claims. And Mark Rutte, the national NATO head. It's a lot of people. That's why I say this is a really dangerous people and the truth needs to get out there. So. Listen, it's not, you know, great news, not great information, but it's stuff that regular people need to know. And so I'm asking folks to, you know, man, share this with people. Make sure that people know that this is a real issue because we need to get to our leaders and make sure that they're aware of what the stakes really are.
This is a warning from Putin that if the West tries to escalate the confrontation with nuclear weapons by driving the warning times even shorter than they already are, which is what the West will be doing if it deploys hypersonic missiles in Germany. This is his message saying, two can play this game. And it's not a game that's a good game for any of us to play. He's showing restraint here. He's demonstrating something, but you have to be smart enough and well-informed enough. I mean, frankly, I'm glad that Tulsi Gabbard is likely to be the director, the next director of national intelligence, because she understands this. I've talked to her about this kind of thing. She knows what she's doing. This drive-by shooting that's been going on against Tulsi Gabbard is outrageous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't begin to say how furious I am that an individual who's done so much in service of her country and has tried to do the right thing in spite of being criticized has been attacked by the so-called liberal Westerners who claim to be interested in freedom. So what you do is you go out and you try a McCarthyist attack on a person who served the country, who has served the country well. If you don't agree with her, okay, I don't agree with her on everything. That's what a democracy is about. This is ridiculous. And I'm sorry to be so angry, but I've just had it with these people.
Yeah, you know, we've had a couple of shows on that very topic, so I'm right with you on that as well. And I'm grateful for picks of that caliber and quality in our government. Because so if we can get to February or January 20th, then we've got a better shot than we do now. We just have to hope that the current administration doesn't do anything rash. Well, listen, Professor, I really appreciate you coming on today. This is one of the more sobering shows we have, because at least when we're talking about the Iran and Israel issue, that was kind of in the Middle East. But this is directly related to our national security. So it's a little bit more important. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely.
On.
And please, Gary, send me those videos. I'll take a look at them. And you've already ruined my day yesterday, so you may as well ruin another day.
Yeah, why not? All right. Well, thanks a lot, Professor. We appreciate it. Appreciate you guys watching us today, too. Be sure and like and subscribe. Be sure and pass this one out to other people. Believe me, people need to know the truth about this deal, especially. And lastly, also, we are on podcast now. And I know a lot of you can't watch every video. So please do go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, anywhere you get your podcast, type in Daniel Davis Deep Dive. Make sure you type all those words in there and you'll be brought right to our offerings there. So thank you very much. And we will see you tomorrow on Daniel Davis Deep Dive.